In this week, on the 8th of July 2004, a fans club, a brand new play by Matt Cooper, based on the true story of the formation of AFC Wimbledon, opened at the new Wimbledon Theatre, telling the tale of supporters' battle to save the club from moving to that place and set up a new Dons. It featured one of Britain's leading actors in Alan Armstrong. We're the fans, we're back, we're doing what they said was impossible. Come and join the celebration, the new trick star was quoted as saying. Yes, that's right, we're back. Whatever happened to that playwright, Matt Cooper, I wonder. Anyhow, we're the same old Wombles, and we're back. Welcome, welcome, dear listener, to another one of our summer specials. You know, we had a week off last week, but the week before we had two episodes. Who knows what we're going to do this week? Adam's on tenterhooks because he loves all that producing. But anyhow, let me welcome mon frère Niall Cooper. Hello, Niall. How's your cornetto?
It's lovely. Thank you very much, Matt. And I was surprised that you mentioned such a fine production as a fans club. So if you haven't
Yeah.
ever seen it, don't worry, it's on absolutely nowhere. You can't
Yeah.
download it anywhere. You can only get the
No.
music.
Yep.
And that's it, because Matt totally forgot to film it at any point. Even though it was a sellout throughout Wimbledon Broadway Theatre, it was a phenomenal success. He just forgot to record it. But there you go. Anyway, Matthew, well done, mate.
No, I did. Re I recorded the last one. I recorded the last one. We did the show again like a couple of years ago, and but you know, contracts and all that sort of shenanigans. Anyhow, it's there somewhere. We move on. Hello and welcome to the man with the buttons, our producer, Dr. Adam Proctor. Hello, Adam. How are you coping?
Yeah, I'm coping. You feel well. I am coping, but I've obviously been doing the We Are Wimbledon fun stuff, and I've joined some other WhatsApp groups. So I'm mainly coping with a flood of WhatsApp messages that I wasn't expecting to be dealing with. But yeah, other than that, I thought it was going to be a quiet summer. It turned out it's not. Never mind.
Yeah. Excellent. And our football guru, the man with all the knowledge that we turn to all the time, Tall Mark Lewis. How are you, Mark?
Good evening. Good evening. I'm well. I'm grateful that the wonderful special guest you're about to introduce has played for so many London-based clubs that it's quite easy to find out background information about them. And
Wow,
when it's any more than that, I'll let you introduce her.
but that's quite scary, to be honest with you, Mark. And I would like to introduce, what's we just got a goal scoring dynamo,
Legend.
club legend, the first ever club player of the year, the one and only Ashley Hinks. Hello, Ashley, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you guys. How are you all?
We're all good.
Good.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's
That was a
great.
lovely introduction. Thank you.
You're
Downhill
welcome.
from here on
Yeah.
in.
Pretty much.
Ashley, Mark, how can you say that Ashley is a club legend? Do you know what I mean? I
I
mean,
said the word
like,
legend.
But
like proper, you didn't.
anyhow, Ashley, this is how it is, to be honest with you. It's a shambles. And you say it can only get better from here. I doubt it, to be honest with you. But you know, it'll be great to hear a bit about you and what you've been up to and where you think the club's going. We'd like to hear you talk about the Euros as well, which is going on as we speak. Before we get to you though, let's just do a little bit of a sort of like a roundup of how what's been going on with the club over the last week or so since we did our last special, which I can't remember when that was, probably just over a week and a bit ago. So since that time, obviously, we've signed a couple of players. We've got
We've signed our own goalkeeper,
we've
our own
signed
goalkeeper.
our own goalkeeper, Nathan Bishop, which is amazing. And then we've got to sign the player with perhaps the best name ever, Delano Mkoit-Splat, which is fantastic. It's a great name. So we've got those players coming. We've played our first friendly in Spain over the weekend, a 2-2 draw, with Kelly and Stevens getting on the score sheet there. And it was only sort of like slightly after the match had finished that we realised it was on YouTube, so we could have watched the game. So, did anyone watch
No,
it?
because I only found the link
No, dude,
after the game. It's so annoying.
this is how obsessive football fans are, actually, that even in pre-season, when we should have much better sensible things to do with our weekends. We want to watch pre-season friendlies played at a snail's pace against the Cypriot champions.
I think it's nice to get a feel for what you think the season's going to be like. But to be honest with you, as you just mentioned, it probably doesn't really give you any kind of inclination, as to how the season's going to go. But I appreciate it. I'm a bit of a football nerd, so I'd watch anything going as well.
You say that, though, how that we think the season's going. But as far as I'm aware, the team we play, Pathos, are in the Champions League. So
qualifiers.
So surely that makes us that sort of level, does it not? I mean, we're competing at Matt, Champions League
you
level.
You're also talking about the Welsh Premier League also being in the Champions League qualifiers.
Wow, wow. You want to bring it down, Niall. Thank you. I'm excited.
Rangers
I'm excited about this.
Does that make you feel better, Matt? Rangers, maybe.
Yeah. But it's exciting. The squad's coming together. It's looking good. I think we all agree that we still do with a right wing back, although there was a trialist with us in Spain, apparently delivered the cross for the second goal, which looked pretty good. And then I think we can still do with a striker as well. That's what I'm thinking. So that's where we're at. I don't know if we've heard any news, any gossip, anything around.
You're looking at Ashley here, aren't you? Thinking you're more thinking as I am.
Oh, Ashley,
because Ashley,
what have
I'm a twin brother. That's what we're after.
No, yeah. I'm wondering if Ashley could step up. To be honest with you, we're missing that goal scoring. Come on,
give it a go, eh?
Yeah, totally.
You can teach him how to shoot for sure.
Yeah,
that's right.
And how to take free kicks. I can't remember the last time he actually took a free kick in school.
Yeah. So So the squad's come together, which is great. The other thing that came out was obviously the report about the financial situation. It's something that we like to talk about here on the Sabre Wombles. And it's really interesting to see how losses have just shot up. League Two losses have gone up from, 0.37 million in 2019-20 to 2 million, the average loss in 23-24. And League One clubs' average loss has gone up to 5.2 million from 1.45 million in 2019-20. So it's just incredible the situation we find ourselves in that we're competing against. Part of me is wondering if those losses are around sides like Wrexham and Stockport, certainly in terms of what their losses might have been.
Well, of course they are.
Yeah.
They bump the average up, won't they? So
yeah, exactly.
It did say that Wrexham was skewing a bunch of the stats.
Yeah. And I wondered in League One whether Birmingham are doing the same in League One. So maybe it's not.
Well, it's still awful. I mean, like obviously I've looked at this and done it a lot with Fair Game, and the direction of travel is getting worse and worse and worse. And, you know, that's another reason we need to put the brakes on, because it's not sustainable. It makes it really, really difficult. And this is something I was quite keen to talk about with Ashley going on, was what you're seeing is some clubs are cutting women's teams because they're going, right, well, where are we going to cut our cloth to try and compete? And for me, that's just like such a backward step, because, you know, women's football is the fastest growing sport in the country, and you're left with clubs who are looking so short-termist. And it's, I roll my eyes, which is really useful just for your benefit. Actually, this is an audio only podcast, so it makes no difference, but I draw you in. Dear listener,
actually,
I am rolling my eyes.
I think we had a genuine example of that. Didn't we? Weren't we in a position to sign Georgia Clifford last summer because Reading completely wrote off their women's team?
No, so Georgia come from Swindon, when she signed for us. But you're absolutely right about Reading. I think it just happened to Blackburn as well in the Championship. So obviously they managed to maintain their Championship status. But Blackburn announced in the summer they're just cutting it completely, like even silly things like there's players coming back from like serious injuries, ACLs, etc., and they've just cut their medical now funding to get them back fit. So you've got players that are, you know, unable to get contracts for other clubs and have just been left in the dark medically. So unfortunately, it's happening far too often. But personally, this is not just because I play women's football and I'm a woman. That isn't the answer or solution to managing money, cutting women's teams. It just seems so bizarre to me that that's sort of the go-to. But I've been in situations where it's happened. When I was 18, it happened at Charlton. They got relegated from the Premier League. They just sold Darren Bent, I think at the time, for like 18 million. And I mean, I am going back to 2008. Cut us completely. And we were second in the what was Premier League, top league at that moment in time, you know, 8 to 10 England internationals, and it happened to a club like us then. So, and unfortunately, you still find that as much as we've progressed, it is an easy get out, I think, for clubs to just look at that and cut that.
Oh, that's, it's ridiculous. And I'm interested because, you know, so now this season coming up, you had a fantastic last season, was brilliant. And I've seen that you've signed Daisy McLachlan.
Yeah.
Is that right? He's come back from Pompey. Has anyone else come in over the summer?
Yes, hopefully to be announced soon. Some really exciting signings actually as well. So fingers crossed we can get them over the line. I think really exciting signings and definitely boost the starting 11, more importantly, and squad as a whole. So we're definitely moving in the right direction. We can definitely do with a few more. Squad's probably a little bit light, but absolutely very, very good signings pending, hopefully.
Okay, when do we expect to hear?
Hopefully in the next few weeks. I'm obviously not, I'm not privy to, you know, the contract element of things, but as soon as I think they can announce, I'm sure the club are keen to announce.
Yeah, so right. You've been back in pre-season.
All the rest of us, fellow podcast hosts, right, just going to put us out there. Who thinks that it sounds awfully like Ashley has done advanced media, football media training? I mean, that was like perfect. Absolute perfect answer. I'm not answering that question, but I'll pretend I'll answer it. I'll just tease you for ages, right? Ashley, that's not how it works, right? You just spill the beans. Nobody's listening. It's fine.
You can't. It's not happened yet. Can't put them off.
So you're involved in that contract negotiation. So what's happening here, Ashley? Are you moving out into management? What's going on?
Who knows? I think with women's football, it's very much who you know and things like that. And obviously, they think the club lean on certain players of experience, particularly if you've got connections with people and like lure them in as such. You know, women's football is a funny old game, and players will move places where they know people and know that a successful player, successful club, etc. And it's a funny old game when it comes to transfers, for sure.
Am I right in thinking, actually, that it's a bit like it was when we were back in the CCL and the lower non-league, where players can move around during the season. There isn't a transfer window.
No, there is. There isn't a transfer window as such, but it operates slightly differently. So in order for a club to approach a player during the season, they have to send a formal 7-day approach to the FA. So, but again, being brutally honest, there's a lot of stuff that goes on that's completely out of those regulations. It just depends on if anyone wants to get someone in trouble or not. But, you know, people get DMs from general managers and managers. So, but official route is you have to put in a 7-day. But you're absolutely right. If someone decided in September that they wanted to go and potentially push for a move and someone put a 7-day in and then the club mutually want to let you go, then there would be an opportunity to.
That's fantastic. So basically, it's Ashley Hinks, leading goal scorer, club legend, and chief scout for
unpaid
for the women's team.
Yeah, unpaid.
Unpaid.
Yeah.
Oh dear me. So what's it looking like? What's pre-season looking like? Are you back yet? What's lining up for you?
Unfortunately, no Malaga trip for us.
I was going to ask that. Yeah,
doing a mission, unfortunately. But the good news is we secured a training venue. I won't beat around the bush. Last year was a bit of a shambles, to put it lightly. The situation we found ourselves in terms of where we were training was a complete disgrace, and probably didn't even meet basic regulations that we're supposed to. So we had a really, really tough season behind closed doors. As much as we did excel on the pitch, it was very difficult. So the club have worked tirelessly to try and get us a venue. We've eventually secured to it in a Mitcham, which is incredible, you know, 3G surface, so weatherproof for us. Unfortunately, because of the times of day we're training, we can't really have a grass pitch, you know, lighting, etc. So we've secured that, which is great. We went back last Sunday, as with pre-season in general, just a very tough period.
Bleep tests.
Oh, yeah, we've got the Bronco tomorrow night, so that'll be fun. Every season they like to bring in a new fitness test, and we went from, we used to have the bleep test, then it was yo-yo, then they moved to the mass test, which was basically 1 kilometre runs in 100 metres times, you know, five. And then now it's the Bronco, which on my argument, it comes from a rugby running session. It's essentially 20, 40, 60 returning on each times five. It's horrific by the looks of things. So that'll be fun.
And last player standing, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Last player standing, but it just goes on a time, like, you know, they just put you in categories, i.e. if you're an average Joe, you know, intermediate, and then kind of where you'd expect a professional to be, sort of thing. So you'd benchmark where you're at.
And as for the training ground and the facilities that you have, how do they kind of compare with this level? I mean, like now you've got two in a Mitchin. Is it sort of, is it comparable? I mean, are we really going against it again? It feels like we're going to be.
This is a marked improvement from where we were last season. However, in terms of the 3G facility, the surface, it's fine. It's a slightly older 3G, if I'm being overly, you know, picky about it. But again, I'm comparing it to what we had last season. But we ideally would, your training facility should have a full functioning gym. You should have full analyst room, and you should have access to, you know, a decent training surface. I would say that it's obviously, we've got the training surface at the moment. I think the other things are lacking. But again, I think that's out of the club's control, finances, things like that. You know, obviously it's separate. And I know that there's huge cost involved. But if you were to look from a professional standpoint, what we would want and expect, we're probably not quite there. However, if you consider, again, being in central London, it's also very difficult because the times of day we're training and stuff and who we're competing against. But it is a marked improvement from last year, and we're definitely moving in the right direction, hopefully. And we could just do with a bit of TLC and maybe some improvements in some areas. But I don't want to say all too bad, because I know the club have worked extremely hard to get us that, at least. So it is an improvement.
And how many days are you training? How many days are you training? What's the training regime?
Tuesday and Thursday night, definitely contact. We occasionally will have a Wednesday session in there. And then obviously as players, we would be required to go to the gym on the other couple of days, to be honest with you. But again, this is all around working full time. So as you can imagine, it's quite a full on schedule. So.
And I know you're full time. Are all the other players full time as well?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, unless some of the girls are studying or things like that, but pretty much everyone works full time. Yeah.
Wow.
I was going to just ask then on the gym membership stuff. Are you all having to pay for your own gyms, or does the club provide that?
Self funded boots, equipment, self funded. Obviously, we get training kit, two sets of training kit usually. But anything sort of external to that is completely self-funded, yeah. You know, if I need to see private physios and things, we have obviously access to a physio at training, but if I need to see someone external and things like that, that is obviously at my own cost.
Right, so, dear listener, if you happen to own a gym, or like if you're a big corporate company like, I don't know, Virgin Active, Vitality, Nuffield, whatever.
Even Hybrid Fitness, yeah. Underneath the ground, they gave us a discount, in fairness to them. But, you know, you think we was hoping that we would be able to get like a free membership, because also we're not using it the amount a full corporate member would use it, given our training schedules. But I've had a lot of conversations with gyms, and for some reason they just can't give you sort of, I don't know, a reduced one. But yeah,
reduced,
I'm at a different
free
gym now.
Free?
Yeah, free. Free, nice.
Right. So listen, everybody out there, all our listeners, our listener, right, get on the phone. Right, AFC Women and Ladies, women, yeah. God, how bad am I? AFC Women's team, right, they need a gym, they need free gym membership for all of them. Make that the kudos, right? Blang it all over your thing. We are the official AFC Women and Women's team gym. Surely that's got to appeal to somebody in the Borough of Merton.
And there's, I'm thinking there's, do you get, you have, your players, you get sponsored, do you can get, like, we can sponsor a kit or something like that?
Yeah, I was going to ask about sponsorship.
Ironically, I actually put out on my Twitter yesterday, the day before, like, I'm personally looking for a boot sponsor. I mean, I probably need 3 pairs a season. And again, self-funded, you're probably aware the price of boots and stuff. It's a shame that we can't get them somehow, but unfortunately we can't. And obviously 3G also, you just wear through them a lot quicker. So I know some of the girls will look for individual boot sponsors and things like that. I mean, I personally am. Anything like that just massively helps. So yeah, shout out for anyone that
can. Does the club have any official sponsorship routes, or are you just individually looking for someone to sponsor your boots?
This would be me individually. The club will have like player sponsorship packages, but they're it's a set price, and it basically includes like a meet and greet and our shirt at the end of the season that's signed, etc. That's like the official through the club one, but it doesn't, obviously that's not to me directly. Yeah,
but you're free to go and seek sponsorship externally for things like boots and whatever if you want to. So yeah,
absolutely.
So, okay,
yeah.
Okay, how much are the boots?
What you realize,
how much are the boots, Ashley?
About like $260 a pair, which is extortionate. I might
$260 a pair?
Yeah.
Flipping heck. I thought, I was thinking like £80.
This is what I mean. It's just insane. And, you know, old school, they're not old leather boots. They do not last as long as they used to. So not only have they tripled the price, they just, the quality of the boots just isn't there. But yeah, £260 for like the elite ones, which is, you kind of need them ones. They as much as they are the most expensive, they are the most appropriate for the amount of contact that you're doing in terms of the, how they're built for your feet and things like that. So yeah, £260, can you believe it?
And are they now, I know there was a lot of talk about them redesigning football boots for women. Are you buying specific women's football boots at this point, or is that still something that's in development?
I think a couple of companies have made them. There's not a huge amount in the market. There's definitely a place for it. I think for me personally, I have like a go-to boot that I know fits my feet shape, so yeah. I typically will not steer away from what I will wear other than a variation of color. Like, I'm very specific in what I'll put on. I know it sounds really minor, but different brands, you could irritate your Achilles, it's crazy what can happen as a result of like you wearing a different pair of boots, particularly on, you know, 3G surfaces and stuff. So yeah, hopefully more research will be done into the women's boot, because we are different. Our hips are different. Our knees are different. So, you know, ultimately our feet are probably going to be different as well. So, yeah.
Both me and Matt, our daughters play football. But Matt's youngest Matt's daughter, Tabitha, plays quite a lot. My youngest has only just given up because she's hit that 14, 15-year-old bracket. But, like, you know, so we totally get it. And, like, you know, I think, Matt, you were looking at women's shape boots, weren't you?
Yeah, I was looking forward. In actual fact, I told Tabs you were coming on. I said, if you got a question, like, what is the question I could ask Ashley? And do you know what? I've got a really bad feeling I know the answer to this. She goes, what do you earn, and does it bother you that you get paid way less than men?
Wow. She just
cut straight to the chase.
I like it. Admirable. Obviously can't discuss.
Right, don't worry about that.
However, in terms of the second part of the question, absolutely. Yeah. I'd love to be a full-time footballer. I had opportunities to, as a, you know, when the leagues were progressing. Unfortunately, it didn't benefit me financially because I was earning more working plus playing football. But of course, I mean, if we got paid the same as, I wouldn't be working now, for example, would I? I'd probably still be playing professional football. So unfortunately, I'm probably 20 years too late. But look, great where we're at now. So hopefully players in my position when I was 16 won't have that choice anymore.
That's the maddest thing I was going to say, because you do a quick Twitter search for Ashley Hinks and you can find lots of different things, like goals you scored in 2011 against Doncaster.
Yeah.
So talk us through the whole myriad of London clubs you played for, and the one in Iceland as well.
Well, it wasn't until recently I was sort of counting them, and I was getting higher and higher on my hand. I thought, God, I am showing my age a little bit. I have played for a few, obviously, London clubs. Chelsea, I briefly was at Fulham, Watford, Millwall, Palace. Five, there we go.
And how'd you
end up to Charlton? You started, you were saying earlier on at
Charlton.
Charlton,
sorry, yeah, of course. I always think they're in Kent, but they're not. They're obviously a London club. So, yeah, and Charlton as well, so six.
You should be really careful when you say that, because me and Matt aren't far from Charlton, right? And we would never, ever, ever call ourselves Kent people.
No.
No, you're not. You're not. I think
they do live in Kent, but they're not from
Palace
Kent.
Obviously, Hayes in Bromley is obviously more Kent. But, yeah, Charlton obviously was my first club and where I broke through into, you know, the women's setup. So,
wow. See, I mean, because I'm just looking... One thing I was quite annoyed about is, again, we try and do our research here, but there was nothing on your stats recently from joining Wimbledon. I couldn't easily see, you know, appearances. I know you've made over 100 and you scored like a trillion goals for us.
Yeah.
I was trying to get all of those sort of stats together. So
I think the club have them on the website now. Probably, I know that Sophia, our GM, she keeps track of it. I want to say maybe I'm on about... must be on maybe 110 appearances or something like that, but I can't remember off the top of my head. I know I got my 100 last year, 100 appearances. Yeah. Goal-wise, yeah, I think I'm near the 130 mark. I don't...
Actually, don't give me that. Don't give me that. You're a striker. Don't be...
No, I actually...
Don't tell me you don't know how many goals you've scored.
No, I know I got to like 120, but generally, once I've passed that, I haven't... made a note.
So many goals, I can't remember who I scored against, what's happened.
My aim is to... I obviously want to get to 150, absolutely, and my aim is to try and do that this season.
You might have already done it, you don't know.
No, I definitely haven't got to 150. I'm sure I'm around like under the 130, so I have to have a look. I'll let you know.
What was your goal scoring record at the other clubs?
Not as prolific as this. I think obviously it's slightly different because in terms of the league we're playing in. For example, obviously the Championship, WSL2, much difficult league. You only have the first season there's only like 8 teams in there, so you're not playing anywhere near as many games, let alone the cup competitions. I think I don't know what happened. I signed for Wimbledon. I've always, you know, scored goals. I've been top scorers at most teams I've been at. Something just seemed to really click with Wimbledon, and it just, you know, it's kind of like trajectory was just huge. But it's something I've always myself think I've been capable of. It's just, I must have just found the right fit at the right time and things just seem to happen.
Well,
so Ashley, a lot of us know about you. Who are the other kind of, who would you say are the unsung heroes of AFC Wimbledon?
We have a lot of unsung heroes, and I'm very much an advocate for making sure that everyone gets their equal share of like limelight. I think we've got some key players that have been is in service to the club years. Hannah Billingham, Kelly Hyman, obviously ex-captain, vice-captain, incredible servants to the club, extremely reliable on and off the pitch, unbelievable. You've then got Rosie Russell, obviously come through, set up, Wimbledon girl, born bred through, season ticket holder, Plough Lane. You've then got other players that have signed similar times to me. Like we're really lucky. We've got a really good core group of players. And, you know, it's for any kind of success within a club, it's important to keep that core. And then when you're transitioning to new players, that Wimbledon identity is being kept. And they're players that instilled that to me when I come in. And, you know, it's something that then I try to pass on to other people. So I definitely think they're some of the unsung heroes. And that's not including, you know, staff. Kev's been a huge part of that. All the guys that are in our coaching staff have been a massive part of the trajectory of the club. So, yeah, unsung heroes for sure. There's lots of them.
I was just going to say, I mean, I've met Kevin a few times, and those anyone who hasn't met Kevin Foster, just forget the football thing. He's just a really nice bloke.
Yeah, he is.
And forget the fact, you know, obviously he's Kelly Jade is his partner and everything else. Sadly, unfortunately, I ended up going to the funeral of both of his grandparents, mm-hmm. which is obviously very sad and very tragic. But at that, and he gave a speech to both of those, and he carried himself so well. But he, we were talking to him at the wake and stuff. He like has that whole local, you know, I'm talking like Merton Park, the area that I grew up in as well, proper football foundation. And I've seen him at loads of away games as well, first team games as well. as well as a number of the coaching staff. So that a lot of them are women fans, let alone our friend George. A lot of people know George.
Do you know what? I will give a massive shout out to George Jones. What he does for our group, I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. He's not missed a training session or game in the amount of time he's been able to be in and around our group. He's the one that looks after all of our equipment and brings it, makes sure we set up a training. Like, it's incredible. He's a really nice human being, first and foremost, and he's a really great person to have around the group. He knows his role, and he executes it perfectly. So a massive shout out to him, actually.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. We've met George, and George has been on the pod a long time ago. So definitely, a really good bloke. Ashley, on the on that kind of Wimbledon spirit you've been talking about, mm-hmm. is there any kind of crazy gang element? Is there a kind of joker? Is there that sort of stuff? Is that kind of, the old school Wimbledon tradition existing in the women's side as well? Or not,
No, I actually think we're a team that people don't like to play. So I would say we do probably have that element to us. I think that particularly moving up to tier three, we had to have that because we know that we don't have the resources to compete. Very similar to the guys, it's the same with us in our league. A lot of the teams are transitioning to full-time programs. Even in our league now, there's three or four teams that are doing it this season. We kind of know where we're going to be at. So you have to do those things in order to compete. And with the group that we have, I can tell you for sure that when we step out onto that football pitch, we're in business and we will fight and we will try and get as many points as possible. So I do think we've got an element. We definitely have some of those types of characters. Hannah McKenzie being one, absolute nutter. So she, is always, if you ever seen it, she is always last ditch slide tackle, but like just up for a challenge and a scrap. But I think there's a few of us that are up for a fight if needs be. And I don't think teams particularly like playing against us, particularly because they're expected to thrash us and they don't. It's very rare that we will get a hiding in a game. And since I've been at the club, other than, for example, Ipswich or when we got beat by Charlton in the FA Cup, we haven't really got battered in any games that we've played.
I love that. I love the fact that spirit continues, because that, I think that is through the club. That's what Wimbledon have always been based on. Like the only way that we can challenge at our level is to, be there. I think that whole idea of being there for each other, I think that also is within the supporters. So like we have to be there for the team. We have to be there for each other because, the resources are so tight. And I like to think that gives us a little bit of edge sometimes in games, that little bit of spark, because we're all there for one another.
I think it also means more to us. It means that these results mean more to us than and for example, we played Watford last year three times and they couldn't beat us. They only beat us in penalties in the FA Cup. But over the course of three games, we won and drew, and then drew essentially, beat on penalties. They've got a huge amount of budget. The facilities they've got are incredible. Couldn't beat us. And when we got the result, the last game we played, we had a lot of players missing. I was missing for injury. We honestly had the most depleted squad. We had to have a 16-year-old come on at like 30 minutes straight from the academy. And we managed to get a draw. And for us, honestly, it was incredible. So naturally, at the end of the game, we were chuffed with ourselves. And they just were biting and nibbling so bad. And it just made it even more rewarding because they were like, you're celebrating a draw, essentially. We were like, yeah, why aren't you, like, how haven't you beat us? Kind of giving it back. So there's absolutely elements of that. And we have a lot of rivals in this league that aren't, typical, local rivalry. We have a few rivalries that are really satisfying if we get a result.
Yeah. I mean, I guess there's a rivalry you're not going to have next season. It's a shame, eh?
Oh, I know.
they bumped out the league badly.
I'm ecstatic they went down. However, what's extremely bizarre is, now all of a sudden so much money being pumped in makes no sense whatsoever. I'm personally gutted because favourite games, other than the first one when I got the red card. Really, really good games to play. Gutted we can play at Power Lane, but obviously the sinkhole situation. But never know, we could draw them in a cup or something. So fingers crossed.
Well, are they okay? Well, I don't like to think that they're putting money into the women's.
I know it's a tough pill to swallow, but they are. So, but yeah, they still be rubbish, don't worry.
Yeah.
Talking about those rivalries, what's the kind
compared
of
to Cosholton compared to Rains Park Rail? That must have been, on the occasions when it's happened, a much more pleasant experience.
At Rains Park, sorry.
No. At Plough Lane compared to Rains Park or Cosholton.
I mean, if we could play every game at Plough Lane, that would be the dream. We have a really good record there. I mean, I think I can count two times we've lost, maybe not even two. We have a really good, we're just very resilient at home, particularly at Plough Lane. It's just a great stadium to play in. It's perfect size. Obviously, if we could get more fans there, even better. Obviously, it massively helps us. And I think that we are extremely successful. And I think we are a good team to watch. And it's a good day out, you know, for families as well. So, yeah, I know the club's ambition is to try and get us on at Plough Lane as much as possible. But obviously with Broncos, I don't know what the situation is with them going this year. But, and obviously the men, it is tough trying to juggle, you know, the surface of the pitch. But it would be nice to just play all of our home games there if we could do.
Yeah,
I'd
say
you love that.
Yeah, and actually, we keep making the promise that we need to step our game up and come down and watch you guys play.
Yeah, I have seen the women's team play twice.
Did you enjoy it?
I have once.
I did. Yeah,
no, I've seen a couple of women's games, man.
Took my daughter to Cosholton. Yeah. Dragged a friend of hers along who's never seen a football match before, who didn't notice that we were 2-0 up with 5 minutes left and managed to blow a 2-0 lead. But that's very Wimbledon for you.
Yeah.
Actually, three times I think I've been to a couple of home games, and obviously I came to the game when you guys lifted the trophy back in the war. So yeah, that was a great day.
That was a really, really good day. Obviously, one of my favourite memories with Wimbledon, definitely.
But there have been so many highlights in your career. Just looking back on it, I mean, what can you pick some things out for us? Because you represented England sort of like at all levels.
Well, you say that, this is ready to go up on my wall. This is my first ever shirt. I don't know if you
wow.
Look at that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Number 18 English shirt.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I'm on as a striker. My dad's got my cap on his wall at home. So I would probably say, yeah, scoring on my debut is probably one of my career highlights. You know, getting picked to play for your country is incredible as it is. Getting to walk out on the pitch and playing, and then to top it off scoring a goal. So obviously representing England's incredible. I think making my debut for Charlton, particularly at such a young age, was a real achievement for me. And I touched upon it, but you know, at the time Arsenal and Charlton were full of the England team essentially. So to break in that at a young age was a massive achievement for me. Playing the first ever WSL game for Chelsea, you know. There's been quite a few. Lifting a trophy at Wimbledon was absolutely right up there. But I've been very lucky that I've got to experience some real highs whilst playing. So long may that continue.
I mean, it is incredible what you've managed to achieve. And I think we, as a club, are very lucky to have you. I mean, and it's great that when we had our the first club player of the year, you know, you were the first club player of the year.
I think it helped that the men were getting relegated that year, so there wasn't any guys to pick from. But I'd obviously had my first season at the club and I'd scored 40 goals. And like you say, it went better than I think even the club signing me thought, OK, actually, this is better than we could have even expected. So, but again, such a massive achievement. The first ever club player, and particularly, you know, being picked from the women's team, and we know predominantly people are, like, you know, supportive of the men. Really, really nice feeling. Something I'll like forever remember. I think it was incredible to get that.
But I think because of that achievement, in subsequent years, you know, like when it comes to club players of the year, you know, women players are amongst that now. And I think what you've done has actually elevated the profile of certainly our women's team and the players within it. So, you know, don't do yourself a disservice. I wouldn't have been surprised if you'd have won it regardless, to be honest with you. So
thank you.
You know, it's brilliant. And I mean, like, we were chuffed because we had the, at that time we were doing a little historic cartoon, you know, and we managed to get your picture. So you're immortalised on our cartoon as well. So you're a part of Wimbledon, you know, folklore.
Yeah, I am. And they've got me in the captain's lounge next to Billy Jones. I do feel incredibly grateful that the love and support that I get from the club. I, I'd like to think that I, you know, I've given the service to, in order to warrant that. I've, you know I take a lot of the plaudits, obviously naturally I do, because, you know, the status of me coming in, particularly at that time, you know, I'd come straight from the Championship as well and dropped to Tier 4 for the club. It, at the time, it was a massive, like, signing for the club. And I suppose specifically because you wouldn't normally have that for your club, not to be disrespectful, but no, that doesn't typically happen. So I think for the club, it was a massive thing. And I think, you know, having come, I think I have elevated the club. And but on the back of that, we get better signings, we've progressed through the leagues. Our name is out there in women's football. And sometimes all it takes is, yeah, it's just someone to just shift that momentum within the club. And I'm pleased to have been able to do that, definitely.
Actually, how did you come about joining Wimbledon?
So I was at Palace and I decided to basically, we was already training 3 nights a week and they were transitioning to 4 nights. I couldn't do that. I couldn't commit to that level, you know, not with working full time. It's just unrealistic. So Classic put a statement out that I was leaving. I had a lot of clubs contact me, you know, still Championship clubs, lower WSL clubs, but I always say to Kev now, it's so strange. From the moment I spoke to him, albeit it was a massive drop and it was a huge risk for me doing that as well. Something just clicked. I felt right in my gut and I couldn't quite put my fingers on it. I said to him, give me a month. Let me just take time and really think about like my next step. And then I just couldn't shift it. From the moment I spoke to him, how professional the club were, you know, I obviously come down to Plough Lane as it was being built. You know, that was the first season. The men were going to play there as well. And I was just blown away. I just thought, yeah, this is something feels right about this. And I'm very much like go with my gut and glad I did. I think the rest is history.
We're incredibly glad you did. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Massive plaudits for Kev, then that will be, he'll be getting a drink bought for him from us lot at least. So on the back of that.
He was extremely professional in how he handled the conversations. Again, particularly, he probably hasn't had many of those conversations in terms of that type of signing for the club. So very, very professional in how it was handled. Just really liked the space and time he gave me when I obviously asked for it. So, I always say it to him, like, you know, hats off to him. Like, he did, the way he handled that situation made me join the club, really. So.
It's fantastic. And so I'm wondering, Ashley, in the future, we're hoping you've got a couple more seasons in you. I mean, I reckon so, at least. And I mean, because you're not stopping scoring. And that's fantastic. And aside from teaching our first team how to shoot, what's your plans? What's next for you? Would you carry on? Obviously, you've got, you know, you're successful in your work life. But, you know, do you see yourself having another bit of a career in football?
I don't really want to put an end on things. I think for myself,
I get that.
I know the standards I expect for myself, and the minute I feel that I'm not reaching those standards, I think I'll know in myself that that's probably time, or my body gives up. You know, whatever one comes first. I think that I was very happy with my season last year, considering, you know, the tier we were in. It was a really difficult season, as I mentioned, for many reasons. So played out of position for that for a huge portion. I still finished, I think, in the top 4 goal scorers of the league, which even for myself, I found that a really huge achievement. So, you know, I've got huge standards again for myself this year in terms of the numbers I want to hit and where we want to finish as a club. Like I say, as long as I feel like I can continue to contribute massively, just the type of personality I am, if I can't do something 100%, I'm not going to enjoy it. So the moment I can't give that, I think will be when I go. But I feel great. I don't feel that there's a reason for me to stop. And I definitely feel like I've got a lot more to give to the club. So, yeah, I've obviously signed for another year. Just go sort of from that, I guess.
Okay. And obviously, the thing at the moment is the Euros are on. Spain are looking immense.
Yeah, I just caught some of the game actually.
Big 2.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think they were always going to be up there, weren't they? France and Germany, Spain, and obviously England. I think, yeah, when you're watching, I think it's what's a bit frightening is that, you know, Spain look like they're not quite even at their best yet, and yet they're performing how they are. So, very, very good team. Obviously, some unbelievable players, and they're just producing the incredible players. So they're definitely a team to watch.
Yeah, and can England get out of the group? Because I'm nervous now. Because I mean, Netherlands is going to be a tough game.
I think we will. I watched the Netherlands game against Wales. I think that Netherlands was still open. Like if Wales would have put away their chances and opportunities, I think different game. I think obviously Viv Miedema, you know, I think took the game away from them, scoring 2 minutes before the end of the half. I think if that doesn't happen, I think they probably have a difficult second half. I think we'll get the 6 points needed. I think obviously Wales, we know, will be bang up for it against us. So that might be I think that would be a more difficult game than the Dutch game, actually. I think we'll get out of the group, yes. And then it's just who we get in sort of the next round and things like that.
Yeah. Well, hopefully not Germany, France or Spain.
Because yeah, exactly.
I think... Only France, obviously, yeah.
Yeah.
But if you want to win, you've got to be the best, right? Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one.
I wondered 2 years ago, 3 years ago, England won the Euros. And obviously, as you said before, you've been involved with women's football for some time. Did you notice a difference, a different kind of attitude from the fans, from the volume of the fans, and just generally people talking about football, women's football, you know, where you work and so on after that?
I think that, yeah, the shift was undeniable. I think even just people's attitude towards women's football, it's always for years been something that's been looked down on, and the clubs don't take the women's team seriously. And I think you're seeing now clubs that are taking their women's team seriously and really giving an investment. This is the massive difference between men and women's football. As you just touched upon, the losses in men's football. If you was to take that same model but operate that in a women's team, your team would probably get in, from where we are, we get in the WSL within two or three seasons. That same budget could never do that and replicate that in men's football. And I think that now this is where you're seeing a shift. There is so much opportunity to be had by investing in the women's team, because not only does it cost you a fraction to get up, the sponsorship is absolutely there, because there's not as many to compete against. And I think that there's definitely things to be said about really promoting the teams. And there was a huge shift after the Euros. I think, you know, teams are now seeing that there's huge sponsorships. Barclays sponsoring the WSL 1 and 2 now. Like, they're not, you know, I don't know, average Joe companies. These are massive, like, huge companies, global companies. And the lady that purchased London City Lionesses, you know, billionaire. What did they do? First season, get promoted. They're in the WSL now.
So what are we? Are we just below WSL? Are we? What are we?
How many steps? So you've got WSL 1, WSL 2. Essentially, just use them as tiers. Tier 1, tier 2. We're tier 3.
So if we were, if for whatever, for however it happened, we got promoted up, how sustainable would we have to go full time? Is that?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
100%, Matt. Yeah, I mean,
but
at that level.
If you think so even if I just give you an example, if we were to get promoted into the Championship, and even if you only gave a basic salary to everyone, just say 40,000. Now, that is nothing, and I'm not saying enough to necessarily live on in London. However, you could get away with offering that salary and have a successful team in women's football, as long as you had all the stuff externally, you know, the training facilities and things like that. So this is what I'm saying. The cost to operate is much lower because the money hasn't historically been there. I'm not saying I condone paying low wages, but I'm just trying to prove the example that you can pay those lower wages as long as you're well above national minimum wage. You're still offering a good wage and, you know, you can do it for a lot cheaper than what you can in men's football, essentially.
Okay, this is going to be the next
thing. I think also, the big
Adam wants to talk.
Now, mine's a bit of an aside, but I just wonder whether it might be interesting. You talked about the kind of engagement with the women's team. Obviously, the next version of Football Manager will include women's football. And I wonder whether you've had any contact or engagement with how they might promote that. Because I think that's like 7 million plus players play that game. And now they're going to have the opportunity to also manage women's football. It sounds again like there might be some opportunity there that maybe hasn't been thought about. I don't know how FIFA kind of FC 20
I'm not
works.
Sure. I know it depends again how many tiers you go down. I don't know how they're going to look to do it. Obviously, I've not been made aware of anything. I think there is just so much opportunity within the female game. You know, as you mentioned, you all have daughters, nieces, sisters, mums, aunties in your families. It's that representation and the see it to believe it is a real thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's so important to inspire the next generation and give them the opportunities that like I didn't have, give them female role models that they can see, you know, having every single Euros game on the telly, not just England games, is phenomenal. And it's great. And it's you're seeing the crowds, you're not seeing a game go on and there's no one in the crowd. So there's obviously a need. And that's people travelling out to Switzerland costing, you know, £7,000-£8,000 to go and watch it, and people are prepared to do that. So it goes to show there's definitely an appetite for it.
Yeah, more than there is for the Club World Cup football thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so, there was something else I was going to ask, and I'm going to forget. Niall, you go now, and I'm trying to remember what it was.
I'm now intrigued. Obviously, the idea of Ashley playing Ashley in Football Manager, yeah. It's like, that's got to be awesome.
Hopefully, it
has to go down to third tier at least. You know, the idea of going like that'd be amazing. That'd just be like kind of that's your next big achievement, surely.
That'd be incredible.
I was just thinking about the differences between all the divisions and closing it up. And I think the right now is the big moment, because you could be able to do that and make a big difference, actually make a big stamp with women's football, because it is going to be a growth sport. It is a growth sport, and the potential of getting the club up a tier or two is potentially there, and it's about really making that available.
It's very achievable. This is the thing. It's not, you're not asking like the budget in order to even for us to get out of Ireland. Obviously, let's exclude what you'd need for the WSL2 and just for a moment what we would need to get promoted. Obviously, you need to have like, you know, a 5-year plan. If you were to take what we need this year to get promoted, the budget is minimal. And I mean very minimal. We've got teams like Oxford, for example. They've gone to a pretty much like a full-time format now, and they're offering very good money for Tier 3. They're now going to be favourites to go up. Any time you're sort of bringing in more training, increasing that training load, you're signing better players. Players are going to be fitter. They're able to dedicate more time. You know, you're not getting the recovery needed if I've got to, you know, I've got to get up at 5 a.m. to drive to X to go to the meeting. So if the club really, really, really want to achieve in women's football, even though we're fan-owned and we all know the capabilities and the you know, the restrictions it gives, if it could be achieved within the women's team, if it can't be achieved with the men's team, and I don't say that lightly, I'm obviously not saying let's just go gung-ho with women's, but you know, the things you can achieve with the women's team with the budgets available, it is a lot more compared to what you can with the men.
So I remember what I was going to ask, basically, so, and I wonder whether you could talk to this. There was obviously some discussion at some point about removing relegation in the women's league. What is the thoughts and feelings around that from the players you speak to and yourself?
They've just changed, they've just brought in basically for the women's football pyramid for the first time this season. So in tier three, you have a northern and a southern, and the top team, well, they used to, before last year, the top two teams used to then play a playoff game, and then only one team would go up. Last year or the year before, they scrapped that, and the winners of each league respectively go up. But now for this season, because of what's happened to Blackburn, the runner-up of each of the tier three teams will now go up, go in a playoff game and go up. So this season and one off season alone, three teams from tier three will be promoted. And then that's the same for the tier four teams, the same model will happen. And then obviously they're going to stop the relegations, but I'm a fan of it. I know obviously there's going to have to be more put into the squads and more medical stuff because of the load into increasing those more games. I am an advocate for it. I think the more games you have, the more teams, the more open and competitive the leagues will be. You know, if you play more games, then you're going to have a fairer outcome at the end of the season. You know, with our leagues, if you had a run of 5 or 6 games, just for example, and you didn't necessarily get a result, that's more than a quarter of your games for the season. It can have a huge impact. Whereas if you then had, you know, more teams involved, that isn't so much of an impact. So I would love to see the leagues open up a bit more and have more teams and make. And you've got a lot of teams that are willing to put money in. You've obviously got in the league below us, for example, Norwich have now just got signed full-time contracts and they're in the league below. Obviously, Fulham have got a huge amount of backing. Brentford have got a huge amount of backing. They're all teams sitting below us. In the Northern, you've got Burnley. Who else? Wolves. There's a few teams up there, again, gone to full-time formats in Tier 3. So, yeah.
It's interesting. And I think this is a discussion that needs to happen within the club about, you know, where we put resources. I mean, every time we sort of make these suggestions, we just get lambasted because I think, you know, everyone is, it's all about the men's first
of
team,
course.
And you know, and that's, you know, and I confess that's usually what we're talking about. So it's a pleasure to have you on. But it, you know, there are opportunities there, and also in terms of, you know, I always think that we have to be shown to be the best example because we're fan owned. We have to show that we're the best example of being fan owned, and that is about, you know, that development. And I think we see that through our youth teams into the men's team. And I think it's showing in, hopefully that's what's happening in the women's team as well, is that, you know, you have that, those progression routes. But yeah, it's something that we need to think about. And I think that we need to think about, you know, the club are thinking about investment anyhow. There are going to be some very difficult conversations that are had.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I think the women's team, you know, it is an example of what can be achieved.
As well, if again, those things that you've just touched upon, if you're in the WSL or the WSL2, your grassroots and all of the teams through that are going to attract the better players because they see a real progression into the top leagues. Obviously, particularly women's football, you're not going to have those players stay around in our under-18s, etc. If, you know, the only route is to Tier 3, they want to go to teams that are WSL, WSL2, that are full-time. Mm. So there is genuinely, and particularly because we're fan-owned, I feel so strongly there's a huge opportunity for the club if they were to really look at us. I think there's a real opportunity there. Obviously, I'm not involved in any of the commercial side. I just think that I fully appreciate fan-owned, the men have always been the priority. But why does that have to be the case? Why does it have to be the case now when you've got real opportunities with the women's team? And I think that's maybe a mindset shift, and that we're not just looked at as, you know, a keepsake, the sake of the air.
I totally think it sounds like an investment opportunity that will pay rewards. If, you know, so I wouldn't see why we wouldn't want to lobby the club to look to invest more in the women's team, because that will get more people there to those games, etc. It seems like a bit of an easy win scenario, actually, to kind of get some extra revenue. So
I think Catchment area as well, we've got a stadium that can seat 10,000, perfect women's capacity. There's so many tick boxes to it. You know, if we also progress up the league, you're then able to get loanees from Chelsea, Arsenal, etc., local London teams, London City Lionesses. Now, like, there's huge opportunities for this club, and you know, that's the reason I'm still here. I'm still trying to be an advocate for what we can achieve. Like, I'm not happy to just be in Tier 3 and just plod along, because before you know it, we'll be relegated because all those other teams are taking it more seriously, and that is the worry. And to be totally honest, obviously we've been given the same budget as what we were operating at in Tier 4. It's not going to be enough. You know, there's only so much as players we can do until, you know, we need that more investment so we can push and break those boundaries a little bit.
So, but one thing is, you said you put out something on, was it socials for your boot sponsorship?
Oh, yeah, the other day.
Yeah, we'll dig that out and we'll make sure that we're seeing our link as well. So I'm sure there's ways of means of helping you out with that. And, you know, making sure that kit sponsorship for the first team as well is out and about. It's amazing what the team is achieving, and your ambition and your fire is fantastic. So I'm really hoping that again the club get more profile, and maybe I think some people within the PLC, within the management of the club, could do with talking to you about, you know, what happens next. It'd be nice to see that you. Maybe people are invited onto the PLC or invited to talk about the plans for the development of the women's team. So, but it's great. Ashley, thank you so much. It's been wonderful talking to you. We'll have to chat again.
Yeah.
I will have to come along and see a game. I'm realizing now I'm the only one who hasn't. and I'll bring my daughter along as well.
Absolutely.
You can do a pitch side interview after the game because amazing. They all come and talk to the fans after the game. So
yeah.
That is another pro, exactly. There's lots you'll see when you come. It's a different experience entirely. So
yeah. Ashley, thank you so much for your time. And thank you to Mark, to Man with the Buttons Adam, Monfrere, Niall, and to our wonderful special guest, Ashley Hinks. We're the same old Wobbles. We're back.